Following are comments on William Shakespeare's King Lear, Act II. Loyal and natural boy, I'll work the means to make thee capable. Gloucester facilely accepts Edmund's devious accusation of Edgar as a would-be parricide. Act II, Scene 1 is Edmund's time to go beyond stirring soliloquies. He will wrest a legitimate identity from Gloucester and raise his status. He tricks his innocent brother Edgar into running away by means of a flimsy letter device that implicates him in treasonous thoughts against his father. Everyone thinks Edgar's guilt is plain to see. See Act 2, Scene 1, lines 19 through 32 inclusive. Gullible Gloucester makes Edmund his heir, promising, quote-unquote, "Loyal and natural boy, I'll work the means to make thee capable." Act 2, Scene 1, lines 86 through 87. Wicked Cornwall now thinks the world of him, too. Fetch forth the stocks. Kent speaks truth to power and pays the price when Cornwall puts him in the stocks for his saucy replies regarding his treatment of the steward Oswald. In Act 2, Scene 2, Kent, who has already taken up a new identity as Caius that lets him serve the king, again meets the foppish steward Oswald as both men are making their way to Gloucester's home. Kent's put-down of Oswald is a classic. Quote-unquote, "Nature disclaims in thee, a tailor made thee." Act 2, Scene 2, line 48. Oswald is a man of artifice who gilds the ugly base version of nature upheld by his masters. He is the opposite of what a proper courtier should be, in that he does not, as in Castiglione's Book of the Courtier, bespeak the goodness and legitimacy of his sovereign. Still, for now, Kent's plainness hurts him, not Oswald. Kent's sassy explanation for striking Oswald is, quote-unquote, "His countenance likes me not." Act 2, Scene 2, line 83. To Cornwall, that doesn't amount to a valid reason for beating a man and cursing at him. This authority figure's response is to issue a command to his servants. Quote unquote, "Fetch forth the stocks." Act 2, Scene 2, line 118. Kent's punishment further damages the king's identity, as will become apparent as soon as Lear arrives at Gloucester's home. Edgar I nothing am. Edgar, now a wanted man, abandons his proper identity and takes on a disguise as Poor Tom, a wandering madman released from Bethlehem Hospital, or as it was called, Bedlam. In Act 2, Scene 3, Edgar makes a narrow escape into the wilderness beyond Gloucester's stronghold and disguises himself as Poor Tom the Bedlam Beggar, who will, quote-unquote, "with presented nakedness outface the winds and persecutions of the sky." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 11 through 12. He says, quote-unquote, "Edgar I nothing am," which appears to mean, "If I remain Edgar, I will soon be nothing at all. I must become someone else." See Act 2, Scene 3, line 21. That makes sense, since at this very moment, Gloucester's agents are on the hunt for Edgar, and he is facing execution if he's caught. As an interesting aside, around Shakespeare's time, according to Dr. Daniel Mason, in his December 2014 article, Tom of Bedlam, in the American Journal of Psychiatry, Volume 171, Number 12, it was not unknown for citizens to encounter beggars falsely claiming to have been released from St. Mary of Bethlehem Asylum, or Bedlam. Mason writes further, quote-unquote, "Edgar, rather than just playing a madman, was playing a man playing a madman." That's a claim worth keeping in mind, and it will come up again later on in these audio lectures. Oh, reason not the need. Our basest beggars are in the poorest things superfluous. Lear makes an impassioned defense of humanity's need for generous excess in the face of Regan and Goneril's dedication to reducing him to bare necessity. In Act 2, Scene 4, King Lear is driven to the edge of madness by Regan and Goneril when he realizes that they are one in despising his authority and defacing his dignity. And so, cursing and raging, he will enter the storm bereft of the care he needs. Lear has earned some chastisement by Mother Nature, but for his daughters to side with harsh necessity is wrong. Necessity here means what is necessary for a person's mere survival and nothing more. The fool responds to Lear's raging with a tale condemning foolish kindness. Namely, he tells the king about a Cockney woman's attempt to be merciful to eels by smacking them senseless after she tossed them into the pie without first killing them. Act 2, Scene 4, lines 116 through 119. The point is that Lear is at the mercy of his passions, and they will prove as hard as eels to kill. He is also subject now to the passions of more powerful actors than himself, so his suffering is inevitable. Moreover, with this Cockney anecdote, the fool may be referring to himself. As a teller of harsh truths, he must be, as Hamlet would say, cruel to be kind. From Regan, Lear's initial complaints net only a patronizing answer. Quote unquote, "Oh, sir, you are old. Nature in you stands on the very verge of his confine. You should be ruled and led by some discretion that discerns your state better than you yourself." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 139 through 143. That sounds like Elizabethan for "pipe down, you doddering old fool, and do what you're told." From this point onward, things go downhill. Regan and Goneril whittle Lear down from 100 knights or retainers to 50 knights, 25 knights, 10 knights, 5 knights, none. Lear explodes, quote unquote, "Oh, reason not the need. Our basest beggars are in the poorest things superfluous. Allow not nature more than nature needs. Man's life is cheap as beasts." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 259 through 262. We know that he has not exactly been the picture of responsibility and restraint in entertaining his retainers. But all the same, the king's anger here seems entirely justified. We may recall the previous audio session on King Lear, Act 1. Shakespeare sees generous excess, spelled E-X-C-E-S-S, as a defining trait of humanity. Its opposite is cruel excess, or plain cruelty, a sadistic impulse to wound and destroy beyond what's necessary, and even to take pleasure in doing so. This is a key insight on Lear's part, though attaining to it has cost him dearly. It is a consistent theme in Shakespeare's plays that we should never try to reduce human beings to the raw version of themselves, to rock-bottom human nature. It happens sometimes anyway. It's a saucy, fallen world. But it's uncivil for one human being to approve of the downward slide of another. At our best, we define ourselves in distinction from mere nature. Decorum, manners, respect, ceremony, the arts, fashion are all ways of maintaining civility. These things help us keep our worst selves at bay. This need to uphold dignity accounts for Lear's insistence on keeping his 100 knights, and specifically on retaining more of them than his mean-spirited, controlling daughters think he needs. A burst of cruel excess ends the second act, when King Lear doesn't get the compliance he considers his due regarding his upkeep. He makes an impetuous exit from Gloucester's home, insisting, quote unquote, "This heart shall break into 100,000 flaws, or ere I'll weep. O fool, I shall go mad." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 279 through 280. Unforgivably, Goneril, Regan, and Cornwall allow the old king to dash out into the storm, and then they shut the gates on him and all who follow him. Taking Regan's cue, Cornwall orders Gloucester, quote unquote, "Shut up your doors, my lord. 'Tis a wild night." Act 2, Scene 4, line 303. The doors of civility have been shut tight, and the portal to the worst in humanity has been opened wide. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Wednesday, July 9th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations from King Lear, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume, genre-based format.